Funding for the Think podcast comes from TCU, exploring renewable and sustainable energy sources to power a clean energy future. Stories of research can be found at endeavors.tcu.edu. Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering the SMU Certificate Program, where you can take courses in art, architecture, history, literature, and more. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
Tipping doesn't work the way it used to. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. In Texas, anybody who earns at least $20 a month in tips may be paid a minimum wage of just $2.13 an hour, assuming their tips bring them up to an hourly rate of $7.25. What this means in practice is that the tips we hand to a waiter or bartender aren't really extra pay, they are basic pay. And beyond restaurants, tip-dependent workers clean hotel rooms, drive cabs, cut hair, and make lattes, meaning the real price of many goods and services is actually higher than what is listed, and that tips are not exactly optional. Some service industry folks earn a whole lot more than minimum wage, of course, and the tips are a big draw. But for many, there's no guarantee of any income over that amount, meaning slow nights can be a real problem. Some restaurants are experimenting with eliminating tipping in favor of a service fee, but of course that makes their menu prices look less friendly than the competitors. And so I'm curious, how is tipping working out these days for business owners, for workers, and for consumers? Adam Platt is restaurant critic for New York Magazine and has explored the pros and cons of tipping on the magazine's Grub Street food and restaurant site. Adam, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me.
Is tipping actually optional in settings where it's customary?
I would say that at this point in the sort of highly evolved tipping culture, the answer, certainly in the restaurant world, is generally no. You know, we've reached this point where, I mean, I don't know about Texas, but certainly in New York, if you go into a restaurant, really any kind of restaurant, it could be a barista, it could be your local diner where you're buying a BLT, it could be, the fancy sort of pseudo-French, tasting menu. If you decide that you have been slighted in some way or you don't, the service or, the souffle you had was slightly fallen. If you decide that and you decide to give a tip that's below 20%, really, if you're rash enough to give a tip of 10% of your bill, chances are the outraged servers will be following you out the door, nattering in your face.
It's strange to go to a place where tipping is not expected overseas. As an American, it feels almost like you're getting away with something.
Yeah, like most places, really. Right. I mean, the piece I wrote, I had just returned. I was in Singapore, which is like most of the world, it's a non-tip zone. If you tip in taxis and, really anywhere, they'll take the tip because they're used to it. They're used to American tourists. And it's really Americans who spread this strange habit all over the place. And so wherever Americans travel, people are used to it. So they'll politely take your money, but they'll also say, for the most part, don't worry about it. You don't really have to do this.
But then you feel like Mr. Big Spender, right?
Well, you feel sort of like a fool, actually. That's how I felt. It's like, oh my God, especially New York. I mean, New York is ground zero for tips. New York, New York is an old labor town. It's a high service industry town. It's a very traditional town. After the last sort of Great Recession, more and more tip buckets appeared around town. If you go to your barista, my barista, I think this is in the piece I wrote, just a barista, a guy serving coffee. They started out just serving coffee. About a month later, there was one little bucket where you got your, paid. And then now there are two buckets, one where you're paid and the other place where you pick up your coffee. So it's like there's this, the phrase that people have used is tip creep. So these buckets are proliferating all over New York. Taxis, there's machines that are designed to suck money from you. All the cabs now, Uber bakes in their tip if you take a, do Uber. The cabs all, you pay by credit card now. The cabbies originally complained about that. Now they like it because it means it's much easier for you to give a bigger tip. So, it's the sort of water in which we New Yorkers swim. So when we go outside of it, it can be a little confusing.
You know what's strange is that, you know, I can understand that tips are ultimately a fee for service, or maybe they grew out of being a bonus for good service. There are lots of people who serve us that we're really grateful to that we don't tip. Like, why don't I tip my dentist or my mechanic or my plumber?
Yeah, it seems to be, and I talked to a bunch of people, but most of them are New Yorkers, so they've thought about this issue with great care. It seems to be it people that you transaction with on a personal level, but also day in and day out. And I think you don't tip your dentist because, A, you don't see your dentist every day, or you don't hope.
In a good week, for sure.
Certainly don't hope to see your dentist every
day. She's lovely, but yes.
Right. But you do see your coffee guy. You do see your doorman. You do see some kind of cabbie. And the way the philosophy that I sort of liked is that, you know, you tip people who you think might hurt you. You know, you tip people who can affect your quality of life. And this is certainly true with waiters. And, you know, the tales of retribution are, you know, it's the famous, you know, spitting in the food. Although I never heard any stories about that. The industry where there's there are two famous sort of regions or industries where you get retribution is sort of wreaked on the non-tipper. One is car valets, which we don't. We have like a parking garage and stuff here in New York, and I tip the parking guys handsomely, although it doesn't seem to keep them from messing up my car.
Right.
But valets in L.A. and I'm sure in Texas, Dallas, you have them. They, you know, can rev your engine. They can, I mean, if you're not nice to them, they can do all sorts of bad things. You know, they leave gum under your seat. They do all sorts of horrible things. The other area is hotels. And again, hotels, you're staying there. You are at their mercy. Chances are they have your credit card number. So they have access to all sorts of things in your life. So it behooves you to be nice to them. And people don't really realize this because, you know, people don't ask for tips in hotels. It's sort of it's one of these ancient things where it's expected. But I had people telling me, like, if you – the one – nobody really knows whether tips work or not, or whether, you know, many studies have shown that it doesn't really increase service, especially at this point where we're, like, do it in a sort of a zombie-like way. But in hotels, I've had people tell me that when you check in, you give your credit card to the person who's checking you in, and that person has access to all sorts of things. Because now they have their credit card, they can put you in a good room, they can put you in a bad room, they can send you flowers, they can put you in rooms that you don't want to be in. There's a room in – I had a person like this – I'm sorry to babble on, but anyway, I had a person like this in New York who said they if they didn't like a person, they would put them in room 1212. Which, if you know, in New York, is 212 is the area code. So people are always dialing 1212, and so the phone just is always ringing off the hook. So if you were mean to them, or they didn't like the look of your face, or if they didn't, you know, if you didn't give them $25 with your credit card, that's where they'd put you. So anyway, I was told, and I've tried this since. I don't know; it really didn't work, but maybe it did. Credit card, $20 right out of the credit card, and you'll be handsomely taken care of.
It sounds a little like extortion.
It is extortion. Really? I mean, it's a bit like extortion. I mean, certainly tips, certainly in the restaurant world, I mean, I don't know, 20% is what you do. You know, it's not, you know, they're not putting a gun to your head. But it used to, not so long ago, 10, 15 years ago, I've been reviewing restaurants for almost a little over a decade now, it used to be 10%, in the 60s, 70s in New York. Now it's 20% is the norm. Some people are now tipping 25%. And, you know, we do it for a variety of reasons. There's this, I mentioned him in the piece, he's an academic at Cornell named Michael Lynn. He's really sort of the Copernicus of the tipping world. He's like the only person who's actually taken the time, because it's a very complicated, you know, there are psychological reasons behind it, there are economic reasons. And Lynn devoted a lot of time to this, and he's hugely anti-tipping, although he admits to tipping feverishly wherever he goes, especially in New York. He has a whole system of it. But he says there are really four reasons you tip. The first reason you tip is you're under this you think you might be making your service better, mm-hmm. right? You're going to get better service. Studies have shown that that's not always true, okay? The second reason you tip is for this sort of altruistic to help the guy who's down on maybe not down on his luck, but you know you're a banker and they're waiters and they're you're giving 25 cents to the guy who gives you a seat at a game, you know, baseball game, that kind of thing.
Right.
The third reason is that really this is the basic reason. He concluded finally, ultimately, that the basic reason we tip is that everybody else is doing it. Hmm. That it has become the sort of standard social norm, and if you're outside that social norm, you will sort of suffer the glares of the majority, and so we all just basically do it.
There is weird pressure. So I was thinking about this. I don't stay in very nice hotels often, but when I do, I feel awkward at the offer for someone to take my bag and carry it up to my room, presumably for a tip. Because obviously, yeah. I pack my own bag. I schlepped it through the airport. I've probably rolled it down city streets. The last 50 yards in my nice air-conditioned hotel is not going to be a problem for me. But I feel guilty, like, denying someone the opportunity to earn a couple of bucks.
Yeah, well, you know, and also he feels that he's entitled to it, you know. I mean, there's this, that's part of what I talked about in the piece is this anxiety, the sort of unwritten anxiety of tipping, and we all get flustered, and it's especially true in hotels where, unlike restaurants, you don't pay a service fee in hotels. And there are other stories. There's another story about a bellhop. Bellhops are famous. Bellhops want their tips. Certainly, again, we're talking New York here. Constantinople.
People, yeah, right.
They want their tips. So there's a vengeful bellhop. apparently there are many vengeful bellhops. And this was at a fancy hotel. This was allegedly a movie star. And he took her 5,000 alligator leather bags up to the, whatever it was, the 50th floor, blah, 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 blah. She didn't... She neglected to tip him. It's a hotel. They have keys to your room. They know everything about you. It behooves you to pay them a little bit. Anyway, the person who told me this swears it's true. It sounds apocryphal, but he swears it's true. So this vengeful bellhop snuck back when the movie star was at dinner and urinated in her yellow perfume bottle.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, and again, that's in the piece. It's confusing, and I think it would be much better off if the world was simplified. And in restaurants, it's simplified by the fact that people are most of the world they give you a service, you add the service fee 15%, 20%. In the restaurant business in this country, that's becoming a little more common in the higher end restaurants. But by and large, restaurant people, and Lynn says this, the professor at Cornell, Americans feel impelled to leave their tips. They really can't help themselves. And a lot of these high-end restaurants had owners of them tell me that they instituted their 20% service charge, and people insisted on leaving tips on top of that.
So here we go again.
Here we go again. And the other reason is that there is this sort of macho, I'm the big guy in campus. I leave big tips. So that is also a great American tradition.
My guest is restaurant critic Adam Platt. He writes for New York Magazine, and he wrote about tipping last year for the magazine's Grub Street website. We're talking about tipping in America. If you'd like to weigh in or ask a question, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about our tipping culture with New York Magazine restaurant critic Adam Platt. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or you can email think@kera.org. It should be noted that there is significant evidence that equivalent service doesn't necessarily yield equivalent tips, because certain things that are out of the server's control, things like sex and race and how attractive they are perceived to be, play into how much they get. Adam?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
This is true. Yes, oh. This is true. In the story that we're talking about, I spent an evening following a server around who the name I gave her was Sophie. It was a very successful restaurant in New York. She was one of their top earners. The various studies have been shown that race non-white servers tend to get less tips. Female servers tend to get better tips. Sophie pointed out that it's not just the way you look. It's quite a sophisticated psychological game. A lot of servers in New York, she's quite an accomplished actor, i.e. a psychologist, really. And she's very adept at sort of reading the crowd and reading people and reading what they want and looking for sort of psychological keys. One of the things that she talks about is knowing who to, quote, flirt with, unquote. And it's often women, really, who in certain, depending who is, like if you have a couple who are on a date, you act with them in a different way. You're sort of less threatening. You're more cozy. You're really talking to the woman. If you have women who are together, you look for the older one to talk to, establish a relationship with. All of this is done in sort of split seconds and sort of done naturally. And there's really, at the end of the night, I was like, there's really sort of a talent to this. And the thing that Sophie would stress, and the thing that the other servers who are very good at what they do stress, is that it really is a skill. And that they'd worked at it, and that they think the tipping argument, especially in these kinds of restaurants, which are fairly on the high end side, is that you may not get better service, but you will have a better experience with a professional top line server like them. And, I could see how that would be true. There are arguments pro and con. The basic thing about tipping, though, is just from the standpoint of you and I just eating in restaurants, it's just become this sort of complicated sort of morass of competing interests. So it would be much simpler. And I know that I prefer just writing adding on a service charge and walking away. It's just too much to think about. But I went into it thinking, well, this is like tipping. How complicated can it be? But it's very psychologically sophisticated sort of area, and I think it's one of the reasons people are so interested in it.
Why a service charge, Adam, rather than adding, say, 20%? Off the top to every menu item?
You can do that, but I think a service charge looks better. Hmm. I mean, service charge, Americans, they've done studies on this sort of. Americans don't like service charges. They view it, one thing about the tipping is it's viewed as voluntary, even though for most people, it's really not, because we all leave tips. But psychologically, we've come to see it as this sort of voluntary reward that we're bestowing on people for good service. When you slap the service charge on there, that looks to many, many Americans like a tax. And they'll pay it once, but they won't come back and pay it again. It's especially true in sort of you know, like I said before, you can get away with this in the grander establishments where people have a lot of money and they're throwing it around to impress each other. But in your average, day-to-day eateries, service charges are a bit of a bugaboo. As I should point out, is, you know, adding $10 to the price of your chicken parm. I mean, for a restaurant owner, there are not a lot of good options in this situation because it's a very tight business. The margins are very low. And historically, tips have been a way for them to pass on costs to the customers. And they're going to hang on to that, certainly on a big scale, certainly at your big chains like TGIF Fridays and Applebee's. And they're going to hang on to that for as long as they can.
We have an email here from James who says, a lot of new restaurants have no servers. You order at the counter and come back to the counter to pick up your food. But when you pay, there's a tip line. I usually give 10%. James wants to know, am I a sucker?
Well, not really. Yes and no. No and yes. Again, they're just taking advantage of you. They are passing on costs to the consumer. The great dichotomy in the tipping world when it comes to restaurants, legally, although this varies state to state, there's something called the tip credit. And the tip credit was designed, couldn't ever figure out how it was designed or what it was designed. But basically what the tip credit does is it allows the restaurant to pay the people in the front of the house, i.e. the servers, the people who come in contact with the customers. It allows them to pay them below minimum wage, and it varies from state to state, well below minimum wage in most cases. I think in New York, I forget what it is, but I think it's
$2.13 here.
It's $2.13, which is nothing. In return, the servers pocket all the tips. And the cooks and the chefs and the management just get paid a standard wage, much of the time minimum, and it's created this sort of dichotomy within the restaurant culture, which has caused more and more friction, especially as the chef's culture, as I'll call it, the chef's culture. Has sort of come to the fore in the last 15, 20 years. It used to be that the people who ran restaurants were, restaurateurs twirling their mustaches and talking in funny accents and sort of wearing their tuxedos. Now it's the chefs. The chef's culture is sort of front and center. You have the chef's music, which is playing out over the crowd. In many cases, you have the kitchen, which is really a kind of a stage, which people are watching. It's open. You have the tattoos, you have the knives, you have the whole TV culture, TV chef culture. So anyway, chefs are in charge of it. More and more in charge of the business, and more they're saying, wait a minute, we are getting jobbed here. And money-wise, they're right. I mean, Sophie, who was this waitress, the server I followed around, I mean, they'll make in New York, they'll make a pretty good six-figure, a low six-figure salary, but they'll make good money. And in many cases, they're getting paid close to twice, they're taking home close to twice what the manager of the restaurant is making. Mm-hmm. And the manager is a salaried, salaried guy, let alone what the people in the back of the house and in the kitchen are making. So it's this sort of time bomb. And it's one of the reasons that the chef owners are agitating for a service charge and to make everything a little more equitable.
I guess it works out well for restaurants, and I recognize that they're working on pretty low margins even when the stuff they're selling is pretty expensive. But it works out well for them that they can have all these folks on the payroll, and if it's a slow night, they can just cut people, and those servers just go home without very much money. But the restaurant doesn't have much to lose.
Right. I mean, again, it's become a time-honored tradition, and it is a way. I mean, if you talk to a restaurateur, chef restaurateurs also, it's on the one hand, tips are very useful to me and into my margins. On the other hand, how long can I keep a full slave, full blown kitchen revolt from happening? So they're constantly juggling. Again, this is the sort of chef owner restaurants. The big chains is a whole different thing. The big chains live on tips, and the big chains. The big chains are the people who fought for the tip credits in the first place. And the main the main threat to the tip credit, of course, is the minimum wage movement. And that's something that's happening all over. You know, I think California, it's happened. It's coming to New York. I mean, it's something that's sort of rolling slowly across the country. And I think ultimately in the restaurant business, that's going to be the thing that sort of, if not puts an end entirely to the tipping culture, it'll put a dent into it.
In your Grub Street piece, you wrote about the Marriott Hotel chain's education campaign encouraging customers to tip housekeepers. I agree. These people absolutely should earn a living wage. I don't mind necessarily leaving a tip. But does tipping help to guarantee that they get a living wage without costing this big hotel chain anything?
I have no idea. We have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it really is the responsibility of the hotel chain to pay their workers properly. I mean, And if they can't do that, then they should raise their rates. Of course, if they raise their rates, we might not go there. But the fact is, you know, I think hotels is among the most confusing tip zones. Cruise ships are another one. Cruise ships are endlessly asking you for tips, and they're leaving envelopes everywhere suggestively. And if you don't put in money in the envelopes, and of course, cruisers tend to cruise again and again. And there are these lists that you get on if you don't stuff your envelopes. And
you're not getting a swan out of your bath towel.
There's a name for the list. I forgot what it was, but there's some name for the list. And it's not a nice name. And then the list is posted in the back. And you know, you're on a ship and you're floating around. You're vulnerable, so you better stuff those envelopes. But you know, it would be a lot simpler if you didn't have these envelopes and you just paid a rate, and people were paid a decent living wage, and we could all get on with our life. I don't know why it's so hard in this country, actually, because like I said, everybody else survives pretty well, just with the regular standard service charge.
We have an email here from Joan who says, what about tipping via electronic device? This is where, like, you go to pay sometimes and there's an iPad or something. After you see your total on the screen, you're asked if you want a tip. The ones that I have seen have suggested amounts. Some start at 20% and then go on to 25 or 30%. Joan wants to know what happened to 15. And you, of course, you can put in your own amount, but don't you feel like a cheapskate if you change the amount from a suggested amount?
You know, I think I made this point in this piece. There are a lot of these electronic things, you know, tip jars and, you know, every app, every sort of like sort of I'm often asked to sign my signature on an iPad, right? And that there's always a way to a button where you push, where you can make more. I have come to see the machine app not necessarily as an enemy, but it's also, you know, I've come to see it as actually when there's not somebody there just actually glaring at you, it's actually easy to leave a less of a tip with a machine. I don't mind it. I think it's okay. But there, I mean, she's right. There is this proliferation of machines and different ways. They're basically tip buckets is what they are. I mean, they're electronic tip buckets, and they proliferated. They certainly, historically, tip buckets have tips. And the idea of tips has always proliferated during times of economic stress. And obviously, you know, we're still coming out of one of those huge times of stress. And this is dovetailed with a time where technology has never been easier or more facile. And so we are being buffeted by endless electronic pleas for pressing this 20% button. And also the other thing, it makes it very, you know, it's very suggestive, like 20%. I mean, I'm a 20% man, which I'm a little bit dated, and I'll do that in taxis, I'll do that wherever. But she's right. You know, the 25% button is there, the 30% button is there. You know, it's a slippery slope we're walking down.
Let's go to the phones now. We have Michael on the line in Richardson. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for an excellent show. I wanted to make it clear, I want your audience to know that a common practice in Texas restaurants now has become deducting the credit card fees charged to the restaurant from the waiter's tip.
I suppose that probably happens, right?
Yeah, sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there you go. You know, I don't know what to say. You know, it's like, you know, like we've been saying, it's a tough business. And restaurateurs are always looking for an edge, and credit cards are getting more and more expensive. And the whole idea, when I spent the evening in this restaurant, they wouldn't even tell me how many tips they got cash-wise. And you're supposed to report it. I think the owner said, well, we had $15 reported that night because I wanted the numbers. I can tell you it was a lot more than $15.
Right, right.
Obviously, certainly in places like the bar. Like, the bar is a huge tip generator because, you know, it's populated generally by men. Men tip more than women. It's populated late in the evening by people who are drunk. People who are tipsy tend to tip more. People who are really drunk tend to tip less because they can't figure out what they're doing. But it's a huge center for tips. One reason the bartenders tend to stay a long time at restaurants in New York, they're viewed as they're solid professionals. And that's a lot of that's largely cash. So I don't know what to say. It's like it's another example of this sort of gray area and how people are being taken advantage of, whether they know it or not. So there are a lot of different ways to sort of game the tipping system.
We should say that a lot of restaurants expect tippers to pay out bussers and food runners and other people who are on the floor when they are. So you might actually have tremendous service, really want to reward a server and not realize that the money that you geared toward them doesn't necessarily all end up in their pocket.
Right. You know, that's also true. What, the other thing that is quite shocking, and this was a companion to the piece when I wrote it, Well, I guess we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we've got a second if you want to finish up.
No. Well, it was about they had they interviewed a lot of servers, and they had their pictures and they had their quotes about the people they served, and they were quite vicious, you know. And the idea of tips are they're constantly in the heads of the people who are serving in restaurants. Much more so, we struggle with it a little bit at the end. They're thinking about it all the time.
Yeah. Adam Platt is my guest. He's restaurant critic for New York Magazine. He wrote about tipping for Grub Street last year. If you want to talk to us about tipping in America, call 800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
Come on, throw in a buck.
I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in tipping.
Do you know what these chicks make? Don't give me that. She don't make enough money, she can quit.
Let me just get this straight. You don't ever tip, huh?
I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job.
That was Steve Buscemi as Mr. Pink in Reservoir Dogs, showing that we have been wondering about this question at least since 1992.
Yeah, radical thinking.
Absolutely. My guest is New York Magazine restaurant critic Adam Platt. You can join our conversation at 800-933-5372. What do we do about situations where we don't get good service? I have had poor experiences in restaurants before, but I know that if I don't leave 20%, the server is not going to make any money. No one is going to pay them for the time they spent serving me, even if I'm not entirely satisfied.
Well, you know, it depends how putative you want to get. You know, I would say if you think you get bad service, leave a bad tip. I know that sounds radical, but that's what I do. I mean, you know, The way the front of the house works in most restaurants, it works different ways, but they usually have a point system for divvying up the sort of hall for the night. And it's often based on seniority, how long somebody's been there, and that's how much you get. The more points you accrue, the more money you get. But it's also a very Darwinian system, especially in a place, I'm sure in Dallas, it's a very sophisticated restaurant culture. certainly New York. And if you are perceived as not pulling your weight or not giving, because people will, you know, the talented servers will earn more. And it is really sort of a talent. And if you earn less, because they split the tips, you know, you're not just taking home what somebody leaves on your particular bill, the less talented, less effective servers will be winnowed out over time. And so if you think you're getting bad service, I would say leave a bad tip. See what happens. That's just my two cents. It's radical. That's a radical notion.
Going back to what you said earlier about the idea that, you know, for the people who are doing the serving, the tip is in their mind the whole time. And it may not be so much in the minds of us who are just sitting there enjoying a meal. It is kind of a relationship of trust, right? I've also had that thing where, for whatever reason, I'm dining in a nice place. I don't want an alcoholic beverage. And I feel like the server turns off the minute they realize that I'm not going to be adding a bar tab to my
bill.
Don't
worry so much about it. That's what I would say. Don't worry so much about it.
You say this, but you tried not tipping in a cab, and I
know. Well, cabs are frightening. I'm in restaurants all the time, and New York cabs are frightening. New York cabs can be a little frightening. And also, New York cabs are horrible. The drivers are bad. The roads are bad. The cabs are cramped. I don't know. Something overcomes me when I'm in a New York cab. Or, of course, you can tip not very much and then leave. You know, I don't know. There are various ways of doing it. In a restaurant, when I write about restaurants, I don't really write about service very much because I tend to not notice it so much because I tend to be in restaurants that are fairly new and therefore everybody's on point. They're all, you know, it has to be really a real screw up for them to make an impression that I'm, you know, that they don't know what they're doing. But it's interesting when you go back to restaurants, the service falls off fairly markedly. And, you know, when that happens, I will leave less of a tip. And, you know, it just depends if you want to come back. I had the various restaurateurs and owners. I said, well, what do you do if people don't tip? And they, this is a very professional guy. He goes, well, we don't do anything the first time. And if it happens again, they don't. We don't let them back in the restaurant. But the first time we don't. The second time, if they don't leave a tip, I think it's generally perceived that if you leave a 10% tip or you know whatever, it means you didn't like something. So they will ask on your way out, was there a problem, ma'am? Was there a problem? And you will say that's your that's your opportunity to say yes, there was a problem. As a matter of fact. There was a problem.
Are you sensitive to the fact that when you don't leave much of a tip, you're Adam Platt? Everybody in that restaurant knows who you are.
Yeah, I am sensitive.
You famously came out to the world with your appearance. You're not
famously.
Well,
I leave a big tip.
Yeah.
Well, I don't leave a big. I don't leave 25% tip, but I leave a standard 20% tip. Yeah, I am sensitive to that. They are sensitive to that. If I left a no tip, there's endless. If you want to get a big rise on the internet, the easiest way to do if you're, say, a movie star or a baseball star is to leave no tip. You know, that bill will be online so fast. Not so much for me, but it's another weird part. Yes, you know, it behooves Americans to leave tips. I mean, there really is, and if you're certainly, especially if you're sort of a public figure, it's a bit of a crushing burden, actually. You know, there was a case, I think it was a football player for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he felt slighted. He got a bad tip, and he left no tip. And I think it was a hamburger play. I can't remember, but the owner immediately put this online. It's like, there's a millionaire football player. He's stiffing me, and the internet went insane, and the player. Had to issue an apology or explained himself. I think he explained himself much like Buscemi did. Very, very matter of fact, you know. I thought the guy did a bad job. You know, but that didn't cut much ice with the sort of, you know, avenging Twitter hordes.
Yeah, exactly. The angry internet will not let this thing go. I have to ask you, your brother is the actor Oliver Platt. Is that correct?
That's correct.
He played a rather intimidating restaurant critic in the movie Chef.
Yes, he did.
Did he come to you for insight?
He came for me a little bit of insight on that. I think he played it he's a much better looking restaurant critic than me. You know, he dresses better. He's very imposing. He has this aura because he's a great actor. He has this sort of aura of like sort of studious contempt, right? Not real contempt, maybe a little strong, but it's like, you don't mess with me. I know what's going on. So he projected that aura. He swaggered into the restaurant. It's actually a really good scene. And he came to me for a couple of things. He'd been out with me, so he knows what happens. And what happens is that you sit there and that I sit there. And I really don't have much of an expression. I just eat the meal. Things come and things go. I take notes. I used to take notes under the table, you know, with a pen and pencil. Now I take notes on an iPad, just like he did in the movie. In the movie, he sits by himself, which is very rare. It's also very rare to tell a chef that you're coming to the restaurant, which is what happened in that movie. But he did ask me about panning restaurants. And, you know, can I help with some, like, they want to write something really mean about this guy's, you know, food, and write me a pan. So I wrote him a pan, and it was the thing they came up with was so much worse than that's the only thing. Otherwise, it was mostly him. You know, I think he did a wonderful job.
He was great in it. I wondered if anything, when you saw the finished film, if there was anything in that performance that felt like an inside joke to you.
No. No, the thing about that performance, his performance was, you know, he played, you know, he acted like much more of the sort of classic critic. I mean, there is this classic critic in films. I don't know if you know the movie Ratatouille, the great Pixar film about the rats. And there's a critic there named Anton Ego, who again is a classic Hollywood projection of this, like this studiously contemptuous, lordly critic. And Oliver did a really good job. I think he was slightly less contemptuous than Anton Ego, but he did a very good job of doing that. Also, the interesting thing about that movie, the chef's movie, is that's very much of a kitchen movie. That is how people in the kitchen see chefs, people in the restaurant world, not chefs, are critics. Like that is in their heads, that's what they see, this sort of all-powerful guy, you know, big mane of hair, you know, beetly brow, who's going to kill me with a one little thing of the pen. The reality is it's a bunch of sort of nebbishy characters wandering around, scribbling notes, and it's really just our opinion, you know. I mean, restaurateurs may sort of think that one lives and dies by the critic, but it's a much more, there's all sorts of things that go into it now. There's Yelp, there's online, there's all sorts of things that go into it. And, you know, if you, the smart restaurateurs that I know, and this sort of came out in the movie also, is that they will take a critic and what a critic says, and all critics are different. It's a very subjective profession. But if you have a critic who's been around for a while, they'll take what the critic says, and they'll sort of take it as a criticism and take it to heart and learn from it, actually, which is sort of what happened in that movie in the end.
Do you have any interest in what happens on Yelp?
Yelp, you know, I'm not hugely anti-Yelp. You know, I like the pictures on Yelp. I think the pictures are good. You know, I think Yelp is confusing. You know, I don't know that I would pick a restaurant based on Yelp. I would pick it based on the local city magazine and what they say, because those guys tend to be, I mean, I'm not being, but they tend to have been sort of, I think you want to make a choice based on a sort of a professional opinion that's sort of been refracted through, you know, various experiences, as opposed to just sort of the helter-skelter looking around and seeing what Yelp says.
It's always
but
fun.
I'm not totally anti-Yelp, but I still think there is room for the contemptuously lordly critic in modern society.
I was going to say, it's always funny on Yelp when someone starts a review with, like, first of all, it was pouring down rain, and I was freezing cold when I walked it. You know, like something that has nothing to do with the actual experience.
I think Yelp, and also it's, you know, the waiter, and it was slow, and it was fast, and they were rushing. Whatever. I think Yelp is actually, and this just has come to me, but maybe we can run with it. I think Yelp might be, there's a lot of tipper frustration on Yelp. It's like, oh, I left my 20%. You know what? This is what I really think. So there may be something to that. You know, it's a forum for the aggrieved American tipper who is basically, like I say in the piece, this sort of zombie walking through the landscape, you know, bleeding 20% out of his pocket.
Did you say that Alice Waters is among the people who is looking at taking tipping away?
I didn't say that, but she is. She has done. Chez Panisse in Berkeley was one of the first service charge places. And it's happening a lot in Berkeley and in California because the minimum wage has now been instituted and raised. I think as usual, she has a point. And as usual, in a restaurant like hers, people will pay. They don't care. They'll pay. They'll pay through the nose to go there. So it's not necessarily a great barometer of whether the anti-tip movement is working or not.
Have you ever heard a server refer to a tip at all? It's so interesting that it never comes up in conversation, and it's like this elephant in the room.
No, it's a total elephant in the room. Of course, servers don't talk to me much, but it is the elephant in the room. And again, if you look at this, these vengeful servers that were published in the piece, it's just shocking the vitriol directed at the non-tipper or even the tipper. I mean, we're just looked at as these sort of vessels for sort of spouting cash. I was shocked by it, but again, never discussed. Of course, I'm a critic. They don't really want to talk to me anyway, so many of them are, half scared out of their minds. They don't, they just want to get the meal over with. But it's not, you're right. It's not mentioned. It's a bugaboo. Everybody does it psychologically. It's a weird, tipping's weird. Tipping in this country is a strange, it's a real, a bit of a rat's nest, I'd say.
Do you know if people from other countries who know that the U.S. is a tipping country, do they tend to look this up and get it right, or do foreigners tip badly universally?
I think they tend to be confused, and I think there have been various studies done. I think the sort of, I went back and looked at all these studies, and some of them are quite insane. But it tends to be that the foreigners who want to make, who are afraid of making mistakes, will leave the biggest tips. I think that the sort of New York Waiters Association did a survey back in the 50s, and it was Japanese tourists who left these huge tips because they were afraid of making a mistake and not fitting in and having people get mad at them. And of course, they exaggerated that feeling, but that's the feeling we all have when we're leaving tips in restaurants. It's in all the guidebooks, leave this, leave that. And if you talk to the restaurant people, say in Times Square, there are a lot of tourists. They say they'll explain to them. They'll explain. Say, excuse me, Sarah, that you owe us an extra $10 for that cheeseburger. Thank you very much.
Adam Platt is restaurant critic for New York Magazine. He wrote about tipping on Grub Street last fall. That's the magazine's food and restaurant site. Adam, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you for making this time for us.
Thank you for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered today by Justin Martin. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones from Braylon Becton. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.